One of the dangers in working for the water industry for more than a couple of election cycles or indeed droughts is the periodic receipt of free advice from all manner of experts in what's wrong with rural water. As the other speakers have pointed out, what a lot of the new commentators fail to recognise is that water reforms have been going for at least a couple of decades in New South Wales. In fact, our business, Murrumbidgee Irrigation, is a product of some of the early reforms, in fact before then, in the late 80s. That's the modern water reform process. In reality, water reforms have been happening for the better part of a century. That's an early shot of the Murrumbidgee Irrigation area, and the turn of the last century really had similar circumstances to what we're currently experiencing. The Federation drought, the need for regional development and water security in western New South Wales. Unfortunately, the early scheme was almost a complete failure as a result of the burden of the collective being placed on the individuals. And in fact, a 1915 Royal Commission was instigated, and one of the conclusions out of that was that they should stop this notion of rate of return on assets because it was placing too much burden on the individual farmers. The debate has almost come full circle. Of course, the other extreme is something that we don't particularly want either, and is well documented in Cadillac Desert, a book by Reisner, exploring the experiences of the Owens Valley in California, where the notion of greed and individual rights was taken to the extreme and as such completely decimated a valley in eastern California. What I'd like to talk today, I guess, is to explore the case for community assets and that balance of responsibility that's required between individual rights and community responsibilities. Murrumbidgee Irrigation controls about 670,000 hectares in the southern Murray-Darling Basin, within the broader Murray-Darling Basin. Our key storage is a Burrinjuck and Blowering, which collectively hold about 2.6 million megalitres, and Eucombine cannot be underestimated either in terms of its value for the Murrumbidgee Valley, particularly from a security sense, at 4.7. I'd like to see those sort of volumes in those storages right now. Unfortunately, it's been some years since we've enjoyed those sort of times. The irrigation area is about 480,000 hectares of the 670, about a third of which roughly is irrigated in any one year. Our customer mix is about a third, a third, a third. So roughly a third large area farms, typically 200 to 300 hectares, about a third commercial horticulture farms, and increasingly small holdings in and around the major towns. A regional population of circa 40,000 and an economy of 2.5 billion. As a company, we were formed in the late 90s, privatised in fact in 1999, as an unlisted public company. So to be a shareholder in the company, you must own land and water in the area, and as such our customers are our shareholders. So we have about 3,200 customer shareholders, 8 directors, including myself, about 175 staff in the former days of the WC and IC, the Conservation and Irrigation Commission. That number was as high as 450 staff in the MIA. And we control about $500 million in assets, 37 million turnover and 4,500 kilometres of channels. I want to start with, the original reason why reform took place in our area, and it was really about cost control and present some evidence, I guess, of our success over time. The red line that you can see at the top is what's happened since 1999 in the corner there to 2007 over here. The red line is what's happened with bulk water, which is the state water charges that we pay wholesale at the river offtake. The black line is CPI, so that's what's happened with CPI movements in that period. The light blue line that you can see in the middle is how we've controlled our company costs in that period. And what you can see is from 1999 to now, we've effectively flatlined our costs. So in real terms, we're not sending out any additional expenses to our customers than what we were 10 years ago. And in fact, I could take that line back to about 1994. A large part of the reason we've been able to achieve that, of course, is a significant increase in staff productivity, and the staff numbers down the bottom there in the blue dark blue line are what's happened since 1999. I'd like to touch on infrastructure innovation, and again, it's always good to draw on history when you talk about innovation. The creation of the scheme itself was highly innovative for its time, and This is a shot of the main canal at Griffith in 1920. Some quite groundbreaking construction techniques used at the time, and in fact that structure is still in place and working. The first is our flagship project of the last couple of years called Barenbox Swamp. Barenbox is an ephemeral swamp in the middle of our district, the geographic centre of our district. Prior to irrigation, would have received water maybe 1 in 7 to 10 years. With the advent of irrigation, and particularly in the 50s and 60s, it became permanently inundated. And as a consequence, the black box community that was endemic to that site completely wiped out. The germ for this project, in fact, started in 1991 with the concept by our chairman, but it took the better part of a decade to at least get some legs to the project. After 3 years of design and approvals in the early, from about 2001 onwards, we finally cut a path through the swamp in December 2005. So the lines that you can see in the middle of that photo are the first lines pushing their way through the swamp to create three cells. One here, one there, and one up the top. Then over the period of about 6 months, we embarked on construction, shifted close to 1 million cubic metres of soil in two different sites, 50,000 or 60,000 cubic metres of rock, 30,000 cubic metres of sand, to create effectively a dike through the middle of the swamp. You can see there that the first benefits of water savings as a result of this project happened roughly 6 months after we commenced the project. So just that section there is the first lot of water that was saved out of the area and put into that the intermediate cell. So this is an active cell for operations, an intermediate cell for operations, and I'll explain a bit here is a 1600 wetland that we're now moving to rehabilitate and restore. So what were some of the benefits? The project cost was of the order of $29 million. As a result of that, we were able to save 20,000 megalitres of water, which was returned to the Snowy River last year as part of the Water for Rivers program. 1,600 hectares of former wetland has been rehabilitated. We were able to create Indigenous employment for the local communities. We recovered 47 kilograms of heritage material, which will form part of an interpretive centre for the swamp going forward. And importantly, from our business point of view, significant improvement to operations and efficiencies in the region. The second style of innovation that our company is focusing on going forward is more in relation to the need for environmental flows outside of our district. River Reach is the flagship project for this. Governments are committed, as we've heard from Gary, to returning water to the environment. As a company, we're committed to finding solutions that don't undermine our customers' businesses and therefore our business. Whilst water savings like Barenbox are an important part of our strategy going forward, we recognise that increasingly governments will enter the market to try and source that water for the environment. River Reach aims to provide water for the environment in the wetter years, but at the same time provide water security for irrigators in the drier years, and to achieve this primarily through market mechanisms and contractual relationships. Typically, if you have a look at how governments have entered the market in the past, they've permanently purchased water and then in the dry years sought to sell that water back to irrigation communities on a temporary basis in order to fund the next lot of investment. River Reach effectively works in reverse to that mechanism. So what we're looking at is below a certain trigger, and it could be at 60 or 70% general security allocation, so an announced allocation. What we're saying is the value of that water to our irrigation communities is never higher than in those dry years. And as Gary, I think, pointed out earlier, the temporary market this year has certainly been hovering around $700 or $800 a megalitre, with people acting under duress trying to keep crops alive, you know, with the threat of capital assets being wiped out. But in the wetter years, typically water is not required to the same extent on irrigation farms because you're obviously having a wetter season. So what River Reach tries to do is establish a contractual mechanism based around a trigger point and say, we'll still retain the capital value of that asset as a community, and rather than sell it permanently to the environment, we'll make it available under contracts for environmental requirements above that trigger or threshold. and as part of the process, capitalise out that value up front to enable some of the changes to occur locally, like on-farm efficiency gains or system efficiency gains. So it's really trying to keep the capital value of that asset in the communities, underpin security in those communities, but still recognise there's a requirement to try and find water for the environment in those wetter years. We're confident that this process will generate hundreds of thousands of megalitres for the environment in the years that it requires it the most, and at least cost to the collective community. And as taxpayers, we should all be concerned about trying to achieve the gains required for the environment at the least cost. Thank you. So key challenges for our business going forward, certainly adding value to our customers' businesses. We are intrinsically linked to our customers' businesses. We're just an extension of theirs in reality. Like all businesses, we've got to grow to survive, so trying to achieve that without burying our customers is required. Delivering on key water savings initiatives, and as Gary highlighted earlier, a key objective of our company is moving beyond our licence requirements, going beyond environmental compliance. To do that, of course, we've got to keep ahead of the drought, which has been a major issue for us to deal with in the last 6 years, and we've also got to keep ahead of the politicians. The National Plan, there are some significant opportunities for companies like ours, particularly to elevate our infrastructure investment beyond just like-for-like and really take our investment to new levels, but also to help us tackle the more difficult, large-scale projects like Barron Box that are not easy to get up. They require time and investment of resources and money, and the plan will certainly help us achieve that. But the significant risks that we see are about that mix or balance between regional responsibilities and individual rights that I mentioned before. There are certainly some commentators saying, look, it's only a couple of thousand farmers, why don't we just buy them out and close the scheme down? On the surface, that appears to be quite a neat solution. I'd like to present just a couple of stats on why it's not just a simple equation, something that you may not have been aware of. Also reliant on our community, of course, is the value-adding industries that form part of our district. You may not be aware. We have a chicken producer in the MIA producing 1.2 million chickens per week, doubling in size in the next 5 years, 2.4 million chickens a week. We have two major feedlots, as well as 80,000 cattle on farms, 75,000 head of cattle on feedlot. We have 13 wineries, one producing 80,000 bottles an hour, all day, every day. Sunrise, our rice industry, $800 million industry, producing rice from paddock to plate, effectively, marketing packaged product throughout the world. 43 citrus packing sheds, 9 million litres of juice per month, and of course, 40 to 60,000 people absolutely reliant on the system. So my challenge to all of us is, can we be as visionary in the next lot of reforms and talk about the successes in the next 20 years rather than the decimation of our regions? Thank you.